Hello and welcome to Hawkeye Nation. This is Hawkcast, your Iowa football, basketball, and recruiting podcast and NFL draft podcast as we currently speak. Brought to you by Go Iowa Awesome and Rivals.com. I'm your recruiting analyst and host, Elliot Clough at Elliot Clough on Twitter, joined by publisher Adam Jacoby and managing editor Ross Binder here on this Thursday morning of the first round of the NFL draft. Before we get started, make sure that you subscribe on YouTube. Hit a like, drop a comment. Let us know where you think Cooper is going to go. Probably in the first round this evening. Where's he going to go? Who's going to pick him up? And with that said, we've got to talk about the draft as well as the portal for football, maybe a little bit for basketball if we have some time, but, we'll start talking a little bit about the draft here as it approaches later today, because Ross Binder, he put together our preview for the NFL draft happening tonight with Cooper DeJean likely going in the first round. Ross, tell us what you're thinking, where he lands, what you've seen, all that.
Yeah, so, you know, it does look like Cooper's going to be a first-round pick. That's the pretty heavy consensus from the mock drafts and the draft experts. He has a first round draft grade. Everyone seems to really like what he can do, obviously. And as far as where he's likely to go, it seems like that back half of the draft. So likely around 17, 18 until, 25, 26, 27, that range is where he's being picked most often and seems like where he's most likely to go. And that could be teams like Detroit, which I think a lot of Iowa fans would be pretty excited about because he would rejoin a lot of recent Hawkeyes there since they took Sam Laporta and Jack Campbell last year. So they would have a strong Iowa contingent there. The Cardinals were a couple teams mentioned in a few mocks. The Jaguars have been mentioned in several. The Packers have turned up a few times. So, there's a lot of, basically, any of those teams that have draft picks down in that range have kind of looked like a possible destination for DeJean. And I think that'd probably be a really good landing spot for him. The nice thing about going at the back half of the first round is you're going to a good team often. So, you're going to get to play with good teammates, probably in a good system. You're going to have a chance to, succeed and win games a lot sooner than those guys going to the top 10 are, much more often going to some pretty lousy teams and going to be put in some tough situations from the jump. So I think that would be a really good landing spot for him if he does indeed go where he's being projected to.
And the thing about Cooper too going to one of those teams is, I mean, it's the obvious deal, right? He can help you as a corner, as a safety, as a nickel, wherever you want to put him, but you can also put him on special teams and he doesn't have to return punts or kicks to be effective. Put him out there as your gunner and he's going to be adding to his value. And for the record, while we're on this, Ross, and then I'll go to you, Adam, did you see much about him? Because let me preface it by saying I've seen a little bit, particularly one NFL analyst by the name of Chris Sims saying you don't want him at corner. And that's just bullshit. Like we've seen it for 2 years. He's one of the elite corners, unanimous All-American. Like, have you seen much of that sentiment in your research for this article?
No, I didn't see a lot of that. He's projected as a corner in a lot of those drafts, and I mean, you called out his versatility, which is definitely one of his better attributes. He can play corner, he can play nickel corner, he can play safety probably if you need him to. So, but I don't think it's a situation where he cannot play corner. I do think it'd be good if he goes to a system that plays a fair amount of zone, just because that would be similar to what he did at Iowa. I think if you put him in a heavy man coverage system, that's not where he has a lot of experience doing, and that would expose some of his I wouldn't say weaknesses, but less strong parts of his game. But he's a good enough athlete and a good enough football player, period, that I think he's going to be able to be successful in wherever he goes, honestly.
He'll also make me the forever second most famous alum of OABCIG High School. So thank you, Cooper. Adam, your thoughts on where he lands and what you expect from tonight?
Your career is still young, Elliot. Your trajectory is still miles higher than Cooper DeJean's. I think we can all agree on that. We can all agree on that.
Okay. I just need a moment to take that in. Okay. All right. Go ahead.
One, Ross, I was shocked at the stat in the article that you posted that, assuming DeJean does get picked in the first round today, that he would be only the third Hawkeye defensive back ever picked in the first round, and the first since Tom Knight in was 1990. If it wasn't 99, it was close. 97,
97.
yeah. So the fact that Iowa, which has, it's not quite CBU, but it's like Midwest CBU. Typically over the years, I mean, you think about all the great All-American cornerbacks that have come through Iowa City. The likes of Desmond King, the likes of Sean Prater. I'm going off the top of my head, but they're almost too numerous to count. And yet the fact is that they and that's just like the cornerbacks, not even getting into the cashbacks, but Josh Jackson, Amani Hooker, Michael OJ Mudiah, just going down the line of recent draft picks. Heck, Riley Moss, and there's more guys than I'm missing. Micah Hyde. That through line of just great cornerback after great cornerback after great cornerback. And it's going to be Cooper DeJean that breaks the first round four cornerbacks under Kirk Ferentz. Finally, finally. And it's well deserved. And Ross, like you said, of course he can play cornerback at the next level, right? Of course he's capable of doing corner. You could put him at, safety, sure, it could work, but it's also, I think putting, golly, I can't believe I'm blanking on his name. Sorry, we'll fix this in post. It's not like it's similar to putting Micah Parsons at like backing coverage at linebacker. You can do it. It's not what he's best at. Because I think he's best at playing cornerback, but you can do it. You can also put him in at cash. You can also, I mean, heck, put him at quarterback. Like, do the thing that Kirk Ferentz wouldn't do, but we know he's good enough to do it. It's just a matter of like, all right, give him the time, the opportunity, put him in position to succeed at that position, and he will do it. And yeah, Elliot, just like you said, he's got value as a gunner too. He's got value as a returner. Just figure out what you want out of him and go and let him do it. But I don't think that there's anything on an NFL field within the bounds of reason that if you give DeJean enough time to prepare for it, and he doesn't need much time, that he won't be great at. So yeah, if anything, I'm a little bit surprised that he's being mocked for the back half of the first round. I think he is mid to better in terms of just sheer talent and capability, but yeah, I regardless, we are here. I am complaining about somebody who's about to be the highest drafted cornerback of the Kirk Ferentz era.
Yes, and once again, quite silly. I think it's honestly it's the same conversation that folks had when Cooper was starting to break through, right? It was talking about him as the cash. It was talking about him as being brought in as a safety because he was this unreal athlete that scored 150 touchdowns in his high school career, played wide receiver, played quarterback, played safety, and you can play safety at the high school level because really, he had to prepare for quarterback, but when you're safety at the high school level, you can just kind of roam free on that back end. And with his instincts, with his athleticism, he sees the ball, he fires at the ball, right? Like it was that simple at the high school level, and you could see those traits that he brought to the table then. But then he could really focus on one position at the college level at corner, and he was really damn good in that zone coverage. So of course, like you said, Ross, depends on where he ends up. If there's an emphasis on zone, if there's an emphasis on man coverage, because it's one thing he has done versus hasn't done. And not just because he hasn't done it doesn't mean he's not going to be elite at it one day, right? Like if there's one thing that we've learned about Cooper DeJean, I think it's that. So excited to see where he lands, whether it's middle of the first round, back end of the second round. Ross.
I say, do we have time to talk about the fact that Cooper said he could beat Caitlin Clark in a game of 1-on-1?
So he said the same thing to Scott Dockerman and I during a media session. We were focusing on other stuff, so Yahoo Sports thankfully got on it. But you guys, I think he can. I mean, he's 200 some pounds, was an elite scorer in high school. Like, it's just becomes about physicality, right? Like, if it was horse, which was, I believe, is what Cooper said, if it was horse, she'd probably crush him. But a horse with no dunks, right? Horse with no dunks. She would crush him. But 1-on-1, I think he can give it to her.
That's true.
Yeah, it's I think if anything, it he hasn't been in the gym the way that she has. So, he's better suited to cornerback presently. But yeah, I think it'd be fun to see two athletes like that, if they're both, shooting well, well practiced, it'd be fun to see.
Now, on to the rest of the draft. Ross, is there anybody that you expect maybe to go in that second, third, fourth round coming up here? And I guess from then on, because it's kind of where could Eric All go? And then Tory Taylor, and then the rest of the guys, right?
Exactly. Yeah, it sounds like, I was probably looking at four guys that have reasonably good shots to get drafted this year. After Cooper, Tory Taylor, Eric All, and Logan Lee seem like the three guys who should probably hear their names called during the draft this weekend. It doesn't really sound like it's likely for any. I mean, obviously, the first round is tonight. The second and third rounds are Friday night, and then the rest of the draft is Saturday. It's not sounding very likely for anyone else getting drafted before Saturday, and that, when the fourth round starts. And at that point, with all the mocks are really all over the place. He's literally mocked in the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh rounds. It really just depends on what draft you look at. And in terms of his true talent and everything, he's probably like a fifth or sixth round pick. It looks like, or maybe fourth or fifth, but it's going to depend on, fit, team need, and who's honestly willing to take a chance on him, in terms of his injury history, which his recent injury history is very bad. He's played 10 games in the last 2 seasons. He a back injury basically ended his season in 2 years ago, pretty early. And last year came to Iowa, as we know, and he got off to a good start, and was really Iowa's most reliable receiver for about a month. And then unfortunately, he tore his ACL, I believe against Wisconsin in the middle of the season last year. And, then he's out for the rest of the year. So, he's had a lot of injuries lately and a lot of pretty severe injuries. I mean, obviously, ACL injuries, they do a great job with the repair and the recovery these days. It's not a career-ending injury by any means, but it's still a very significant injury, and back injuries are no joke. They are something that can linger and come back, and so I think there's a lot of question marks about his his durability, because and they're legitimate question marks based on what he's shown for the last couple of years. And the other player I think that's, will go off the board next for Iowa is Tory Taylor. But the question mark with Tory is he's a punter, and the draft doesn't value punters all that well generally. He's a great punter, a phenomenal football player. We obviously got to witness him for 4 years, what he can do, and he was excellent. But the draft doesn't love punters. It's just not a position where they put a lot of value in. It's something where you can obviously pick up punters through free agency and everything pretty easily. But we've also been punters do get drafted. Since 2000, that's 22 of the last 24 drafts have had at least one punter drafted. And lately, there's been kind of a surge in punters getting drafted. There were three taken last year and four taken the year before. That day three is obviously where punters tend to go, that 4 through 7 round window. Even four is a little bit early for punters. Five and six is more likely for the best punters, and then round seven is just kind of a free for all. But I would probably expect Torrey to get drafted in that 5 to 6 range.
Now,
Yeah, Lee.
if I can interject here, Adam, if we were just talking about best of the best in quality of positions, Torrey Taylor would go number one overall, correct? Yeah.
Yeah, in
Sorry.
terms of just like value over the next best candidate, yeah, because Torrey Taylor is sort of singularly great as a punter. But the issue with punters, as Ross sort of alluded to, is you either need one or you don't. And there's so many teams out there right now that just have no market for Torrey Taylor. No slot to put him in. So yeah, Ross, of the five mocks that we've got listed here, three of them have Taylor getting picked, and two of them have him to the Saints, and then one to the Packers too. Like it really is just is a matter of does this team need him? And the vast majority are set at punter. And that's really pretty much the only reason that he's going to go this late, because just in terms of sheer value, in terms of sheer production, and at a lot of positions, people may balk at the fact that he's 26 years old, but you're bringing him in to punt, and punters tend to last forever. So right now, he is basically entering his prime as a punter. His draft value is pretty much never going to be better than right now in 2024. And that's still a like third day selection is what it is at punter. But all he needs to do is get a roster spot and he'll prove his greatness from there, period.
Now, of this crew, before we move on to the portal, of this crew of guys that are, let's just say, not Cooper, not Torrey, who do we think has the best shot of having an if not long, solid NFL career? To me, it's probably I'm probably caught between Eric All and Logan Lee. It's because Logan Lee has probably a higher floor, whereas Eric All has a higher ceiling. So it's between those two for me. And with that issue of injury for Eric All, that's where that comes in. And with Logan Lee, it's you know what you're gonna get, right? You know what you're gonna get from Logan Lee. He's gonna be an awesome locker room guy. He's gonna fill his role. He's gonna do what you need him to do, but he's not gonna be a star, right? That's what you're going to get from Logan Lee. To me, it's between those two guys.
Yeah, for me, I think you just have to look at the potential that Eric All has. If he were coming into this draft healthy, we're probably talking about him as a second round, maybe a third round guy. But, what's the best ability, availability? And 10 games over the last 2 seasons is, just sort of jumps out at you in terms of what teams really want to expect. And yeah, ACLs and spines, you don't really want to mess with those two things a whole lot. Now, that being said, we didn't see the back injury really affect him at Iowa while he was healthy. ACLs do have a tendency to heal. It is 2024 and 1984. So, at the very least, that part, the ACL, is an injury that teams can expect to be more or less. 100% might be pushing it, but he will be able to be cleared to be on the field, presumably by the start of next season. So I think there is a path for All to be a healthy NFL player. And if he is 100% is always relative in the NFL. But if he is able to play to his sort of in-season capabilities and not being hampered by those injuries, he's a guy who has the talent to be that 8 to 10 year NFL career sort of guy. Does Logan Lee have an 8 to 10 year NFL career on the field in him? Not so sure about that. I think he has a great future on an NFL staff, college staff, even a high school staff. He's a guy that has that sort of passion for the game. And so that experience at this next level is going to be great for him too. But, Logan Lee sort of is in that Kate Martin mold for me. Again, like you want them in the locker room. You know that they are going to bring it every single day. You know that they are going to be an asset for the team. And you know that their best days with the sport are probably going to be on the sideline. So that I'm looking forward to seeing how long a pro career Logan Lee can get out of himself, because we know if there's an ounce of potential, he's going to get it and he's going to use it. And I'm curious to see what he does with the sport afterwards too.
Yeah, I think you nailed it, Elliot, in terms of, the floor versus ceiling comparison. And if all is healthy, if he gets, some good injury luck for the next, few years, I think he can definitely carve out a really nice NFL career because he has the tools to do so. He's a good tight end. He can block, he can catch, he has good athleticism. There's no question, I think, about that side of things. For him to be able to hang at an NFL level, it's really just a matter of can he stay healthy over the long term. And if he can do that, I think he'll do well. With Logan Lee, I think it's a matter of where does he fit and can he carve out a role for himself where he is, effective and somebody that can stick on that NFL roster because that's going to be the hard part for him. I think if he can find that role and find that situation and team where, they need him and he can really contribute to what they're doing, then he's got a shot to hang around too.
Now, let's move on to the portal with probably about 20 minutes to talk here. Deacon Hill enters, was that yesterday, 2 days ago? Things run together 2 days ago on Monday, I believe it was. I think some folks reading into that he believes he was going to be passed by Marco, or somebody told him that he'd be passed by Marco come fall. That's probably the read of it that I have. That you'd have to think that the staff was just like, hey, this is what it is, this is what's going to happen, and here you go. And then Deacon found himself third on the depth chart between not only Marco and but now Cade, behind Cade as well, presumably behind maybe another quarterback they go and get in the portal. I think one could imagine a scenario like this. I necessarily didn't think it was going to happen. To me, the way I expected things to go was for him to stay at Iowa right out the rest of his career, whether or not he was playing on the field, just simply because of how last year went. To me, I imagine he's going to end up FCS, probably low tier FCS, after last season. But we can talk about that in a little bit. But I guess initial reactions from you guys, was it similar to mine in thinking that just means Marco passed him on the depth chart and that's the expectations going into next season?
Yeah, that was my initial read of it. And, I think the writing was pretty much on the wall. And we sort of noticed that after the spring game that the hope was that that Deacon Hill would demonstrate that he had a future as a Big Ten quarterback. As I mean, yeah, he started in the Big Ten last year, but a bunch of his success was really the defense putting him and the offense on their back. And never was the offense and never was Deacon Hill able to sort of reciprocate that for the defense. At the very least, Marco Lines looks like a guy whose future involves him to sort of win games or get the team in position to win games on his own. Or, the offense would be able to hold up their end of the bargain with Lines running the show. It never really looked like Deacon Hill was the, like, I'm going to take this game over type of quarterback. That potential was just sort of never flashed there. And at that point, yeah, if that development is not already showing, then yeah, at some point you just sort of say, all right, Marco, you're running with the ones while Cade gets healthy, because we want to see what you can do with the proper, support around you. So, yeah, I was a little bit surprised just because why would somebody voluntarily leave Iowa City for FCS? But, at the same time, if you want to play, and ultimately, if you're walking between those sidelines, you're not doing it just so you can, stand on the sidelines and go, yay, let's go. Like, no, nobody only practices. Practice is not why you play football. We'll put it that way. So, I hope Deacon finds a level of football that suits him and his talents. And I also hope he finds a situation where there's a little bit more stability and more of a chance for him to grow and find what's good about playing quarterback without having to do it under the fire of the lights of a Power Five program that has nowhere for him to hide. So I think this is going to probably work out best for him. Ross, what was your sort of read of the situation?
Yeah, I think I was pretty similar to you guys in terms of being a little surprised. I think just because of the timing and he was the number one quarterback in the spring game last weekend. So, it seemed like, he was kind of the next man in after Cade. But I think in hindsight, that was probably more of a situation of giving Deacon an opportunity to prove that he could, earn that, quarterback one position, or at least being the guy to step in after Cade. And it does seem like, because he got all those reps with the ones during spring and in the spring game, quote unquote, and just didn't really, stand out. He didn't separate himself from Marco. He didn't really prove that he can succeed essentially in that role and do what Iowa needs a quarterback to do. So I think given that, it does make sense, especially if there was, as we're kind of speculating, that conversation where it's like, okay, we did spring, we saw what you can do. Here's where it looks like in terms of where you're going to be on the depth chart. This is what things look like. And if he was, it's totally understandable if he saw that or heard that and was like, okay, like you said, I'm not here just to hold a clipboard. I want to go somewhere where I can actually play football, and that's doesn't sound like it's going to be here, so I'm going to take an opportunity somewhere else.
Speaking of going somewhere to not just hold a clipboard, do want to shout out to I almost called him Nate Stanley. No, Spencer Petras at Utah State. I did see that the Aggies' other quarterback just transferred out, so I think that's good news for Petras to get that starting job for the Aggies over there at USU. And yeah, I think a whole lot of Hawkeye fans would be thrilled. Thrilled to see Petras put together one really good season over there in the Mountain West and really tap into his potential in that environment that I would wager suits him better than Iowa City. So shout out to Petras. That's it.
It'll also give Hawkeye fans another reason to be pissed off at Brian Ferentz if he goes out there and succeeds. So they'll love
As if they needed another reason. As if
that.
anybody starts, still sitting on the fence, like, jury's still out on how that all went.
So the other thing that you mentioned there, Ross, is the fact that Deacon got the reps with the ones all spring. That is something I think we need to talk about, in that some folks are really upset about that. And on its face, I understand, because you're looking at him as the guy who's getting reps with the ones to potentially be a starter and work with the best players on the team, while Marco's working with the twos and the threes. And folks see those, basically anything under the ones, I think folks see, oh, that doesn't matter. He's not learning anything. He's not playing with the best guys out there. But in terms of just sheer reps, Marco needed them more than Deacon did. Well, for this reason, one, but two, because Marco's gonna be with this team long term. I think it was a long-term play by Tim Lester. I think it was, okay, we see a future with Marco. I think it was a scenario where, well, what Tim talked about it in the coordinator presser, right, Adam? It was, We're acting as though Cade is in there right now. That's what we're doing. And for Deacon to be able to make the reads quicker than Marco was, that is going to translate more to Cade. So it was not a we are playing Deacon here because he's unequivocally better. We're playing Deacon here because it's going to be better for us in the long term. It's going to get Marco more reps. It's going to get Marco more comfortable. It's not going to make him lose confidence. Because if you're playing against the ones in Iowa's defense every practice as an unexperienced redshirt freshman who doesn't know the offense, that's going to kill your confidence. Just going to throw it in the gutter. It'd be like throwing me out there. I mean, not really, probably much worse if you're throwing me out there, but it was the right decision. And this is just another moment where, to me, Tim Lester starts to earn a little bit of confidence, not only from me, from the fan base, but like the benefit of the doubt when he makes decisions too, unlike Brian Ferentz.
Yeah, the one of the things that, excuse me, that Tim Lester mentioned during that press conference was Hill was practicing with the ones for the benefit of the other 10 guys, because at the very least, Deacon had that experience running with ones in practices and was going to more closely approximate the production that Cade McNamara was going to make. Like he was closer to the reads that Cade was going to make. He was closer to the, getting the timing out right. So, like Lester said, it's for the other 10 guys on the field. And Lester also said there's no depth chart. And maybe it was even Kirk that said that pretty much like straight out. So yeah, the fact that Hill was practicing with the ones and Linus was with the twos and the threes. Yeah, Elliot, like you said, it's so Linus can get more reps. It's so Hill can be closer to whatever McNamara is when he is cleared in. What are they projecting? June, right? For McNamara to be full go. Yeah. So, like that is the play. And it's not this hierarchy of we think Deacon is unequivocally better than Marco. It's a who's the familiarity that we're trying to, create long term. And yeah, like you've said, it is the play that you make if you're thinking long-term development, and this is a long-term development program. So in that sense, it's a little bit of a bummer to see Hill leave just because he has that rapport with the ones and has been sort of getting them ready for when McNamara is able to get cleared. But also, like spring practice is over. So there's no further reps there that will be thrown into chaos with Hill leaving. And so they've gotten probably the most that they're going to get out of Deacon Hill. And this is his opportunity to leave with his head held high, and it should be held high. And sir, I hope that he's being a little bit celebrated by some Hawkeye fans because he is leaving as a Big Ten West champion. That's pretty much the only bright spot on Deacon Hill's resume at this point, but it is what it is. And if as long as Kirk Ferentz is the, what matters more than wins per game, I still can't believe he hangs on to wins per game. Let's think about that for more than 5 seconds, Kirk. But I think winning percentage is usually the term that gets used. But the he did still do it. Like Deacon Hill is still that division champion, like winning quarterback. And he was never going to be the guy who is the like top level. Like he's never going to be all Big Ten quarterback or anything like that. And at the very least, like you can't lock that door with Marco Linus at this point. You can with Deacon. But at the very least, he gets to leave Iowa City on his terms and find a situation that's going to work better for him. Is that going to be lower tier FCS? Is it going to be D2? Is it going to be the Olympic water polo team? Like, I don't know, whatever it's going to be, good for him. Go be great. Just like all his teammates have been saying on social media. Like there is not one shred of bitterness that I've seen from any Iowa player toward Deacon, toward how the last season went or anything like that. He's a beloved teammate and they want to see him go succeed. And with luck, Deegan Hill will find a situation where he is actually, and the coach can actually say that he is setting him up to succeed.
I muted my mic to say that. Ross, is there anything that you have to say on Deacon or to add here before we talk a little bit about what's next for Iowa football in the portal?
I do not, I like Adam said, I wish Deacon well and hope he finds a good landing spot. That's the best we can all hope for him, I think.
That works for me. Now, couple quick things regarding the portal before we get out of here for football. Raylan Sharp visited yesterday. We got some details on that. Hopefully coming here on the premium board shortly. And that would be a very positive addition to the Iowa offense. Speedster, he's small. Of course, he's 5'9", 172, last I checked. Of course, you'd probably want more of a true X to come in for Iowa, but anything helps at this rate with the Iowa offense and how few scholarship receivers they have at the moment. You could probably use him on special teams too. So he'd be definitely a positive addition to the roster in Iowa City. And then you have to think, we were all like, okay, they have to go get a portal quarterback, but now they actually like seriously have to go get a portal quarterback with Deacon off the roster. Some coincidental things happened. Like within 20 minutes after Deacon announced, Brendan Sullivan of Northwestern announced that he's in the portal. He's a North, or excuse me, a Western Michigan. He had an offer from Western Michigan and Tim Lester out of school. There's one other name that I'll address, and other than that, you can head over to iowa.rivals.com and check out our premium article about other portal quarterbacks Iowa could go after with either Western Michigan ties or Iowa ties. And how they'd fit and all that about what's next at quarterback for Iowa. But the other name that I think a lot of people are talking about is Nick, I think it's Evers or Evers. I want to say Evers. Previously at Wisconsin, was not there during the Bud era, so there's no connection there. But he had an offer from Iowa out of high school. He was a four-star quarterback, initially committed to Florida, then he went to Oklahoma, then he transferred to Wisconsin, and now he's back in the portal. And I just don't see that happening, like just with the track record of Iowa. I mean, he's a guy he's had just a fickle history, a history of being fickle, I think is the right way to put it. But so that doesn't seem like something Iowa would necessarily want to go after. Ross, you had something to say there.
Yeah, I was just gonna, kind of piggyback on your point. I do think the fact that he's been such a nomad is not going to appeal to Ferentz. And then also I think what Ferentz, they're gonna prioritize guys who've actually played a quarterback, I think, in this transfer target. And Evers has been a lot of places. He's not played in those places. He's been on the team, he's practiced, et cetera, but they're gonna look for a guy that has some real game experience. And I think that's a very good idea. That's what this team needs. They don't need any sort of a project at quarterback. They need someone that can step in, ideally push Cade for that, QB1 job, but also to serve as, a backup if something, does happen to Cade during the season again. So.
Yeah, that's really the line that you want to toe here. And it's a tough one because Cade McNamara is on the roster. Cade McNamara is a guy that you brought in to be the starting quarterback. So the pitch that Iowa has to a potential transfer QB, a potential portal QB, is we may or may not need you to start 12 games. And it could be zero, it could be 12 plus. What that number is going to end up being, it's not really clear. And so it's also going to be a brand new offense. And no, it's not going to be a Brian Ferentz offense. So the pitch improves a little bit, but that's also a lot of instability, a lot to ask of a kid to come in for. And if what they're really looking for is a 2024 ready QB, it's a lot to ask when you don't really know exactly what the situation is going to be and will not know for several months. All right, well, we'll not know until you get to June and July, and McNamara's knee is hopefully healthy at that point. And so, who's the kid that sees all those question marks and says, "I don't care, I'm in"? And is that kid going to be good enough to compete at a Big Ten level at a, like, I'm going to put up 25 points a game under center in this offense sort of get? Does that guy exist? We'll see. We'll see.
And does that guy have experience? There's so many
Right.
things that folks want and or need from that quarterback position that they're going to get out of the portal, but you're going to have to pick and choose probably. And beggars can't be choosers. And Iowa's definitely a beggar at that quarterback spot. So that's going to do it for us today here on Hawkcast. We appreciate you tuning in. Before you go, make sure if you're watching on YouTube, you hit that subscribe, drop a like, drop a comment. Where do you think Cooper's going to go? Are there any other names in the portal do you think Iowa either could or would go after for quarterbacks, and any other needs that you think they need to focus on with their limited scholarships? Before you get out of here, also, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, wherever you're at, hit that subscribe button. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, leave that rate and review. It helps us out and it makes us very happy. We appreciate you doing that. Also, don't forget to subscribe at iowa.rivals.com/subscribe if you're not a premium subscriber yet. We've got a ton of great content for you regarding the portal, recruiting, and more on our premium board and in our premium content. So once again, folks, I am Elliot Clough at Elliot Clough on Twitter, joined by Ross Binder and Adam Jacoby. For now, we will see you next time.